On the Empire Podcast this week, it's Christmas, Theo. It is a time for miracles. So be of good cheer and delight in what Empire has given you from the bottom of our bulging sack. There's Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg here to talk Daddy's Home and Tom Hooper blabbing all about The Danish Girl. All that and more on the movie podcast that didn't get a Christmas bonus this year, but did get a subscription to the Jello of the Month Club. And that's the gift that keeps giving the whole year round. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. Before we begin, quick word of thanks. iTunes, in their infinite wisdom, have voted us one of their best podcasts of 2015. We're flattered and humbled by that. And it's all thanks to you guys, listeners old and new, people who spread the word and don't send us hate mail covered in dog poo. We don't like that. At least I assume it's dog poo. Couldn't do it without you. So consider this a big thank you from the heart, from myself and the whole podcast team. Here's two of them.
Hello, thank
Hi.
You.
Hi, thank you very much.
There we go. Right, it's the last podcast of the year, if you don't count the three specials we have lined up over the next few weeks. We're full of Christmas cheer, aren't we?
We are.
And the cold, quite frankly. This week I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning. First up, there's our geek queen. Now, what do you get the supernatural fan who is everything? Well, you get her one or both of the Winchester brothers, Dexler and Wexel, tied up, gagged and bound and placed lovingly under the tree. Really hope I put enough air holes in the box. Hello, Helen O'Hara.
Hello. I don't really approve of kidnapping, for the record.
Is it Dexler or Wexel? Who's your favourite? Again, which one would you...
I would have to say Hexler.
Okay.
Yeah.
I took the precaution before I crammed them into the box of removing their shirts.
Well, thank goodness, because otherwise it would be very, very lacking in space in there.
Yeah. I had to oil them up to get them
in.
It's a quite small box and they're quite big men.
They are, yes.
So I had to, get under them.
I mean, thank you for going to all of that effort. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Next up is our Soundtrack Supremo. A lady who'll be getting a new pair of chinos for Christmas, a new pair of Michael Giacchino's. How do you pronounce his name?
Giacchino.
Giacchino.
I've always wanted a pair of kinos. Was that two German cinemas?
Yeah.
It's Emma Thrower. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. What do you want for Christmas?
I would like Clint Mansell to compose a unique score just for me.
Not going to happen. You haven't given him much time, in fairness.
No, that's true.
He's got a week. Clint, if
you're
listening...
He could definitely do it.
Yeah, he could do that. Right, well, you know what this means, having you both in the podcast?
What?
It means that this podcast passes the Bechdel test.
In which
two women in a movie have a conversation about something other than men. What do you think of that, Helen and Emma?
Actually, Helen, did I tell you about the guy I went on a date with last night?
No, tell me more.
He really looked a bit like one of the Winchester boys, actually.
Oh my goodness, this sounds very promising.
Yeah, I did think of you.
And would you say that Oscar Isaac has the better hair in Force Awakens, or is it Adam Driver?
Driver definitely is deserving of like a L'Oreal ad.
It's time for your questions. You've sent in some Christmas themed crackers for us to tackle this week. We're going to do some quick fire stuff. Here they are at JFG in digital 3D. That's the toughest Twitter name to say. What films that have absolutely zero association with Christmas do you watch every festive season?
Tucker and Dale versus Evil, because it makes my mum laugh so hard she falls off the sofa.
Do you want your mum to fall off the sofa?
I mean, I do when she's laughing that hard. It's really funny.
I think there's something that's faintly sociopathic.
She has not injured herself in falling off the sofa. We have a well-carpeted floor.
Okay. All right.
I don't have a tradition. It would be something with my sister, something happy that reminds us of our childhood, like Jumanji or Hook. No tradition.
Hook is Christmassy.
Very Christmassy. I don't know if I have one. I mean, I tend to watch a lot of Christmas films. But this year, my wife and I are going to start a new tradition of watching Paddington.
Oh, brilliant.
Awesome. Which isn't set at Christmas, but feels like it is.
Yeah, totally. Definitely.
And it's wonderful and heartwarming and has a talking bear. So they're pretty much all the boxes ticked.
I'm going to try my mum on John Wick. I think it'll also make her laugh.
I'm getting this is a weird insight into you. It shows we can all grow as people, I guess. So Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Yeah.
And John Wick.
Yeah. My mum, I should make clear, like, mostly watches sort of mum films.
Uh-huh.
But So we put. I actually put on Tucker and Dale versus Evil for the first time after I thought she'd gone to bed, because I was like, she won't want to watch this. I'll put this on for my brother and sisters. And then she came back downstairs, having just been beautifying herself or something, and sat down to watch it. And I was like, oh, I'm not sure you'll like this. It's a bit gory. And then she proceeded to have the best time ever. So, wow. You know, there you go.
Which Shane Black Christmas movie would you pick?
Iron Man 3. Sorry.
Straight in with Iron Man 3.
I have already watched that this season, so maybe Lethal Weapon? Haven't watched that one yet. And I've also watched Kiss Kiss Bang Bang this season. I've been doing quite well on Shane Black.
As far as I can tell, The Nice Guys is instead of Christmas, which is a...
What?
Bit of a shame.
Are we sure he was involved?
looks great, though. At Alex Jaylin asks, which movies would have been improved by being set at Christmas instead of another time of year?
Independence Day.
Yeah, Halloween.
I mean... Apocalypse Now could have done with some more tinsel. Surely.
Yes.
Yeah, that would have been. Godfather?
Yeah.
You know, when Sonny gets shot and Don Corleone's looking at him, my boy, with his tinsel and his baubles around his ears. Yeah, I could have done that. Sorry. I can't. And CMW Ashby asks, if John McClane was locked in a building infested with gremlins, who would win?
John McClane. but Brain Gremlin might give him a run for his money.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think John McClane as well. Because it's interesting, if you look at all the Die Hard movies, at no point does he get anyone wet, steady.
Wow.
So, you know. Come on.
And he doesn't actually pause to eat very often either, no. So he should be fine.
At Reed92 asks, best scene in the snow?
Most of Fargo?
Yes, very, very good. Fight at the end of Kill Bill, Volume 1.
There's nothing as festive as seeing Luke put in the belly of the beast, quite literally, in Empire.
Yeah, Empire Strikes Back.
The end of The Thing.
Ah, of course. When MacReady and Childs makes no angels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And live happily ever after.
and help comes and they're saved and they don't freeze to death.
Can I opt for the whole of Force Majeure?
You absolutely can. Why not? Phil's not here. Our art house guru, Phil the Tim, is not here. And I know he'd be going, Akiru.
Yeah, obviously he would.
Yeah, he'd be saying that. He'd be going for that. He'd be going nuts for that. And quite rightly so. And, you know, it's a wonderful life.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Snow's just good, I think.
Snow's great.
Yeah.
We like snow.
Hooray for snow.
Yeah, good snow. Well done, snow. right. We're racing through these very, very quickly. Yeah. Which movie character would you most like to invite over for Christmas lunch or dinner?
The Vision. Currently.
Really quick with these.
That was very quick.
This is your subconscious
Marvel.
Talking.
Yeah. It's just my Marvel subconscious, isn't it?
Oh, okay. So in that case, it'd be like Captain America. But I was actually thinking Richard Attenborough's Santa Claus. Because if you're going to have Christmas, like, have Christmas, you know.
That's true. Mm. That'd be very, very
also,
festive.
I hear he can get me a house in the country, like a really nice one, and a promotion at work, so, and a husband. So, like, it seems like a really good idea to invite him over.
Yeah. Mr. Creosote.
Do you have enough food in the house?
I've got a consignment of Wafer Thin Mints in.
Oh, you
so
should be
I
fine
think...
then.
I think he'd be all right. The cleanup operation afterwards would be horrendous.
Yeah, a tad messy.
Yeah, it would be. But he'd be an interesting conversationalist. I wonder what a Christmas dinner with Neil would be like.
Boozy.
Mm. Yeah. I suspect I suspect with Neil would no longer be with us. If that film were set in the real world. All right, another couple of quick ones. Dan J. Brady asks, the best movie Santa and the actor you would most like to see playing him in the future?
Ooh.
Ooh. Well, I think I've already answered the best movie Santa. Richard Attenborough, I think, is great, honestly.
Okay. David Huddleston's going to argue with you.
Actor
otherwise.
I would most like to see play him in the future. I've talked before about my enormous admiration of Brendan Gleeson's stripy beard. When his beard ceases to be stripy and becomes white, Brendan Gleeson is Santa Claus.
Awesome.
Wouldn't he?
Can you be an Irish Santa Claus as well?
Yes.
Like, properly?
Well, I mean, I didn't want to give any secrets away, but actually Santa is Irish.
Is he?
Yeah, he just moved north.
Okay.
Yeah. how far north?
Quite a long
just
way.
The north. With his big bulging sack.
Oh my goodness, you have to make everything rude, Chris.
I don't have to make everything rude. Jesus.
As long as Donal can be his chief elf.
Coming down your chimney.
Yes,
very much on board with that.
Yes, that'd be good. I think, yeah, why not Will Ferrell? Why not Will Ferrell?
Why not?
Will Ferrell as Santa
not?
Claus.
Yeah.
Go for it in the future. You played the elf. Why not graduate? What about Bill Murray as Santa?
I think you need Santa to be a little bit more predictable. I feel like he would be a spirit of Christmas, but more of a sort of like, he would actually be a great ghost of Christmas, mm-hmm. past, present, future, I don't mind, but I'm not sure I would trust him to do the administration work necessary to deliver billions of presents in a single night.
Okay. What about, this is maybe tailored for you, Helen, specifically, but what about Jensen Padalecki's from Supernatural? I mean...
Yeah. Doesn't have the belly like a tub full of jelly.
Shirtless
that would be the
Santa. Heaving sack.
I feel like physiologically, you know, they're not quite cut out for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
But I mean, if they wanted to sort of audition, that would be fine.
This is a good one. From Anne Merriweather, who's the best Scrooge on film?
Bill Murray. I'm going to see Jim Broadbent on Monday, so...
Oh,
that's nice.
Jealous.
Give him our love.
Will do.
Say hello to us.
But also he's playing Scrooge.
Yeah. Oh, right, that's
Carol,
yes.
Okay. I wouldn't say Jim Carrey.
I quite rightly say, what about Alistair Sim?
I do like Alistair Sim. I do like Michael Caine.
Mm-hmm.
I do like Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, we're just listing people now.
Well, I like them all. But I'm going to have to stick with Bill Murray.
Okay. The correct answer is Michael Caine in Muppet Christmas Carol. That's what I have on my card. So sorry for that. And then the very, very last question from Natalie Lowe, NC Lowe. If you could drop in on any filmic Christmas day, which would you choose?
Okay, it would be a Muppet Christmas Carol, because then you'd be having Christmas with the Muppets. Come on.
Yeah.
In line with that, I feel, you know, Christmas, generous spirit, time of help, of need, maybe head over to Tiny Tim and feed the boy up, you know, give them some help.
Mm. Or just cook him, baste him, pop him in the oven for a few hours.
Oh, wow.
Keep him marinated.
Not enough meat.
Wow. I mean, come on. The spirit of Christmas is not cannibalism.
I got dark.
Really dark, really fast.
Sorry, I'm not the one who shows my parents John Wick and Tucker and Dale versus Evil. All I'm suggesting is eating a young, slightly crippled boy.
All right, Jonathan Swift, enough with your modest proposals.
That's all I'm saying. I would say that, for me, most of the great Christmas films aren't actually set on Christmas Day. They take place either on Christmas Eve or right before it.
Mm.
So I'd go for Die Hard. Because then what I would do is I would go in and I would allow John McClane to win the day, because obviously he's awesome.
Yeah.
But I'd also tell Hans, I'd be waiting on like the 25th floor with like a parachute, and I'd quickly, as he flew past, I'd quickly throw it onto Hans Gruber, and so he can quickly trigger the parachute and get away. Because he deserves it, frankly, doesn't he?
No. He's a terrible, terrible human being.
Why is he a terrible human being, Helen?
Because he kills a bunch of people in order to steal lots of money.
He kills, like, one person.
Like a bunch of people.
Mm. He kills Joseph Takagi.
Well, what about the security guards downstairs?
It's not Hans' figure in the
trigger. About that really nasty man who takes cocaine?
Okay, he kills him as well. But he deserves it.
What about his efforts to kill Bruce
about
Willis?
His watch. Yes, but...
What about taking everybody hostage and taking Bruce Willis's wife hostage?
It's Christmas.
What about saying his brother on
him? You can't take someone hostage at Christmas. When can you take someone hostage?
Never. You can never take someone hostage.
Oh.
It's like eating Tiny Tim. It's something we don't do.
Not even Tiny Tim.
Okay, no, this is good. This is good. This is all going in my ledger. Do not eat Tiny Tim. Do not take people hostage on Christmas Eve. Okay, got it. Right, if you want to have your questions read out in the Empire podcast and afforded the same respect we just afforded those, then do send them in via Twitter. We're at Empire Magazine, and you can use the force as well. You can do that. And you can also email us, podcast@empireonline.com, and Facebook us, where we're Empire Magazine. Right. Time for our first guest, or should I say guests, Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell, last teamed up on the big screen for 2010's The Other Guys, but now they're facing off against each other in the comedy Daddy's Home, which is out on Boxing Day. When they came to London recently, we sent John Jr. Nugent along to talk to them. Word of warning, they were very funny indeed, as you might expect, but this was at a junket, not in our usual kind of environment, and John's mic was a bit quiet. So, you're not here for us, you're here for them. The interview with and Mark Wahlberg.
Wow, thanks for further confusing people with really sound quality, Chris. You're terrible.
Enjoy.
Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell, welcome to the Empire Podcast. How are you?
We're both fantastic. Resplendent.
Just going to look at you for the whole interview.
Okay. For those listeners at home, Mark is staring intently at the side of my face.
Obviously, we're here to talk about Daddy's Home. This is a film about a sort of one-upmanship between a dad and a stepdad. I thought we could start by sort of seeing who might win in real-life versions of these little games. Mm-hmm. So, first off, your characters tussle over a toolbox.
Yes.
How are you at basic masonry?
Well, I can replace light bulbs. I can replace the batteries in the remote for the TV.
Whoa, boo.
I can put gasoline in my car.
Can you put up a shelf?
No, no way. Yeah.
That's me.
But I don't know about you. Can you build things? Can you build things?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Could you build a treehouse like you do in the film?
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty impressive. There's a big skateboarding scene in this film, obviously. How are you in real life as skaters? Were you doing any of that for real?
I was skating a little bit.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing half pipes and pools and that stuff, but
these details,
I could handle myself on a skateboard.
Yeah. Am I right in thinking Tony Hawk did some stunts for you in this film?
He did.
And he got cut.
Yeah.
Cut.
And he hurt his leg.
Sliced his leg open.
Unfortunately, hit a little nail in the... But it is... he doubled me and no one knows it's him.
Okay.
So it was a very thankless job.
That's pretty good.
But we're very surprised and thankful that he was willing to do it.
Yeah. As stuntmen go, that's pretty good going.
Wow.
What about dancing? There's a lot of dancing in this film. Who would win in a dance-off between the two of you?
I think Will would win. Will is has boundless energy on the dance floor.
Yeah.
He'll dance you to death.
It just depends. If it was about choreography and getting steps down, Mark would probably beat me. But if it was just about creative expression...
Freestyle?
I think I would win.
When you dance in the film, you have your shirt off. And you both spend a bit of time with your shirts off. Who's more comfortable shirtless in a movie?
Well...
I wouldn't say I'm comfortable. The embarrassment has just been beaten out of me. Yeah.
You just don't care anymore.
I just don't care.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
There's obviously a brilliant basketball sequence in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Are you either of you basketball players? Do you dunk?
Will is closer to dunking than I am, but we've played together quite a bit.
Yeah.
Will's a very good player.
You've got the height, I guess. Well,
a little bit.
Yeah.
Will
yeah.
Smooth, man, going to the basket.
We had some good battles.
Yeah.
Good battles on the court.
Did you get to, because obviously it was filmed at a real-life Lakers game, is that right?
Lakers-Pelicans.
Yeah.
And
we played in that arena.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get to spar with any of the pros?
No, I wish. Well, actually, I don't wish, because they would have just swatted the ball
down
from us.
Yeah,
but we did get to shoot the scene that you're talking about in the movie at the real halftime of the game. We only had 6 minutes and kind of maybe two takes to do it, which oddly enough was exciting because you don't really get to do that on a set a lot of times. Yeah, and they were shocked when I pegged the cheerleader in the head with the basketball. Yeah,
was she all right?
She's recovering.
She's recovering slowly. Yeah.
We send our prayers.
Exactly.
Yeah. I hope it's not too much for spoiler to say that John Cena has a brilliant cameo in this film.
Right.
What was it like? I know it's only a small role, but what was it like working with him? And was that, I felt emasculated just watching him from the aisle. Like,
he's an intimidating figure, but he could not be nicer. So it helps offset any sort of fear you might have in coming up against him. It's such a kind of fun punctuation on the movie, and kind of it's a bit of a role reversal for Dusty's character to kind of be on the other side of it, and ties it up really nicely. So
you quite enjoyed that.
I really did.
Yeah.
Watching him squirm,
he was great. So happy,
so great.
You had obviously you had The Rock cameo in The Other Guys. And then you had John Cena in this. Who will be the actor turned wrestler in your next collaboration?
The Big Show.
Oh, yeah?
The Big Show.
Triple H?
No,
H.
Big Show.
Triple H still around?
Big Show. He's going to pick you up by the ankle. Like that.
I would like... that would be an interesting sensation.
Drop you on your head.
Well, that part I wouldn't like. But to be suspended like that.
Have either of you considered, getting into the ring? You sometimes get... celebrity cameos.
Yeah.
You could handle yourself, Mark.
I want to fight Will in the ring.
We're going to fight each other for charity.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, Wembley Stadium. To sell out Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
Will you be the guest referee?
Sure. I'd be pretty terrified to be inside that ring.
No, you're just the referee. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, but wrestling, you know, the referees get...
Sometimes get pulled into it.
They get pulled in, yeah.
True. Well, I guess we won't do it then. Unless you're willing to referee.
I'll see what I can do. I'll check my diary.
Okay.
In The Other Guys, one of my favourite scenes is where you discuss who would win between a lion and a tuna.
Right.
Who do you think is the ultimate victor in this scenario? Like, can we settle this once and for all?
The lion, the tuna argument? Well, I think I proved it in the movie. That
you made a very convincing argument. Yeah.
The tuna would get all of his tuna friends and destroy the lion in a sophisticated attack.
Yeah.
Tasting a lot of sashimi, baby. A lot of sashimi.
The lion would be outnumbered.
But if it was one tuna?
One tuna?
In a wrestling ring.
I just dragged that lion way out to sea until he was too tired.
Be eating a lot of sushi.
You know what? There's only one way to find out. After the wrestling match, the charity wrestling match at Wembley,
yes,
we'll then have a lion and a tuna fight each other.
That'll be the exhibition.
It'll be back to
the undercard.
Back to the days of the Roman Colosseum. We'll just have weird things fighting each other.
Yeah. Okay.
Big deal. We got to start marketing this thing.
Well, we very much look forward to that. Guys, thank you so much for speaking to us.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Pleasure.
That was Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell. And now it is time for some movie news. Got a lot to discuss and not a lot of time to discuss it because we need to talk Star Wars. So what's happening? Let's give people some good news to tide them over the Christmas break.
Glad tidings. There are reports that Kurt Russell is in line.
Wait a minute. Hallelujah. Go.
Is in line for a role in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah.
Which is great.
Yay!
Kurt Russell was recently at the Hateful Eight premiere and I was moved to comment on Twitter that he was still super duper handsome. But also he's
why
on the
do you have to reduce men to commodities, Helen?
I'm not reducing him. I'm noting that in passing as I go on to talk about his great roles at the moment.
You're just objectifying a really great handsome man.
You're the one who just stripped and oiled two guys at the start of the podcast.
Yes, but I had to fit him into a box. I had a busy schedule. I had to eat Tiny Tim, for the love of God.
So anyway, Kurt Russell, who is on a total roll at the moment. Hateful Eight is coming up. Spoiler, we liked it a lot. And he's also in another Western in February called Bone Tomahawk, which also, spoiler, we really like. And he sports magnificent moustaches in both of those. It's not clear yet whether he will have a magnificent moustache in Guardians of the Galaxy or indeed if he will take the role. All we know is that he is in talks and that they would like him for it. He would be playing Peter Quill's dad. Now,
yes.
We believe that this is not the person it is in the comic, but we don't know for sure who it is yet.
Yes.
There is some suggestion it might be Captain Mar-Vell, but that is wild speculation at the moment.
Yes.
And in no way even close to being anything confirmed.
Indeed. Or Adam Warlock, or all kinds of other characters in the cosmic side of the Marvel Universe. Let's not dwell on this too much. It hasn't happened yet. But if it does, it'll be awesome, because Kurt Russell is awesome. Even if he were playing himself, I could actually buy that. I could buy that Kurt Russell would turn out to be
Peter Quill's
dad.
Is a super powerful alien who
Absolutely.
Is Peter Quill's... Yeah, you know what? Except he would never cheat on Goldie Hawn that way, with Peter Quill's mum.
But he may have met Peter Quill's mum
before Goldie Hawn.
What if Goldie Hawn?
Okay, all right.
Well, maybe.
No,
maybe
I think the numbers might work out. Yeah.
What if Laura Haddock is a young Goldie Hawn?
This would explain almost everything.
Everything. Almost everything.
It would explain certainly Bird on a Wire. but I don't know about everything.
I don't
else.
Know how.
But it would explain Kurt Russell's amazing hair.
Yes, it would.
It would explain that. It would explain his swashbuckling swagger.
It would.
It would explain why he's a space angel.
It would explain why he looks so good in a eye patch.
Yep.
I mean,
yeah.
It'd be great. But yeah, I've been saying that some burgeoning universe snapped this man up. And I think I've been saying for a while that he would be a perfect Peter Quill's dad.
Well, and here we are.
And there's proof on Twitter. If you want to go and search my Twitter feed, good luck to you. There's over 60,000 tweets. but I definitely did tweet to that effect. a while ago. Kurt Russell is amazing. There's other space news, isn't there?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah.
So it's big, apparently. Space Week.
It's space. Why is that? Why has everyone just brought all the space news out this week?
It's
of
weird,
all weeks,
isn't it? Kind of. Yeah, so some new trailers dropped, almost as if there was a gigantic film coming up that they might want to go in front of, which...
But Sisters
opened right.
last week.
You're right. I don't think they've thought this through. But there were trailers this week for Independence Day Resurgence.
Is there a colon? I don't think there's a colon.
So Independence Day, some kind of punctuation, Resurgence.
question mark.
And also Star Trek, no punctuation, Beyond.
Yes.
So what did we think of those?
Okay.
I watched them. I watched trailers
this
week.
See, you're learning, you're growing as a person. If you're new to the podcast, Emma is new to the team, and one of the first things we first learned about her is that she doesn't watch trailers because of just weird reasons. Also, her Twitter handle is really weird. I want to ask you about that very quickly. I am not Wayne Gale is your Twitter handle.
Yeah. I love Robert Downey Jr. Uh-huh. It was me, I think, being very pretentious when I started on this little journalism road a few years ago, and I thought, you know, Wayne Gale in Natural Born Killers has no morals as a journalist, and
you've
darn
right
it,
place.
I have morals. So okay. it was purely that. I am not Wayne Gale.
Okay,
there's no logic to it whatsoever. But
well, there's. I mean, that's some form of logic.
Yeah.
It's, you know, maybe not your finest logic, but it's fine. Yeah,
there is an Emma Thrower on Twitter.
Exactly. There's also that's also why there's also an Emma Thrower on Twitter.
But getting back to the news,
yes,
which
yeah.
have to get through.
So watching trailers when I have to, I definitely do that. I know this is contrary to what most people think, but I actually quite like Star Trek Beyond trailer because it was colourful and just a bit of a breath of fresh air, and all of the sort of sci-fi / supernatural / superhero films seem to be very, very dark at the moment. I thought it was fun. I loved the use of Beastie Boys' Sabotage. I think, you know, there's...
get a new song, Kirk.
Yeah, seriously.
Honestly.
He's been listening to that one for 20
I know,
years.
But it's a great song.
It is a great song.
Maybe it's like me, you can't make out the lyrics. I can never understand what the Beastie Boys are saying.
What? They're really clear.
No, they're not. They're just... And I'm going, I don't know what you're saying.
I mean, they talk nonsense, but it's really clear nonsense.
I don't know.
It's quite similar to Klingon.
And they actually, of course, was it that song that they actually referenced? No, it's not. It's Intergalactic. They talk about Mr. Spock. So there is a link there that predates the 2009 film. By
See,
quite
Nick,
some
Nick and I have a game where now and again in the office he'll put on Beastie Boys tracks and then it challenge me to see what they're saying. And I, like, one word in 20.
You're so weird.
One word in 20.
I'm kind of with you on this somewhat.
Oh,
in that I think it's good that they are actually going boldly to new places because I think that we've seen them enough visiting races that we already know and
yes.
that, you know, that we're already familiar with. So there's a lot to be said for bringing that flavour of the show into the movies. My biggest bugbear with the trailer was I don't want to see the Enterprise destroyed again. Thanks very much.
Sure.
It had an impact in, what was it, Search for Spock, but
mm-hmm.
now it's just like stop attacking
generations.
I know. Well, this is the point.
Yeah.
It's been done several times now, and I don't like it. And I like the Enterprise, and I want it to be okay.
Again, it's kind of, you know, has it earned it at this point?
Exactly.
Did Star Trek Into Darkness earn its big, not only its big reveal, but its big kind of twist-a-roo-y, you know, who quote unquote dies? I'm not going to give too much away in terms of. I'm not going to name names, but. You know, had it earned that at the moment in Wrath of Khan, it had an emotional impact because you know these characters have been together for years and years and years. And does will it have the same impact here? There's a shot in the trailer of Kirk looking forlornly through an escape shuttle as the Enterprise is broken apart, or the saucer section at least is broken apart.
Yeah.
And you know, I just kind of feel like he's on this point been on this ship maybe 2-3 years. I mean,
at most,
I'd be annoyed if someone threw space dust at my flat, but. But yeah,
I'm a bit upset about that. I am very pleased, however, to see a little bit of interaction between Spock and Bones. I think Bones especially was really ill served by Into Darkness, and we need to see much more of him. It is a triumvirate, that it's not just Kirk and Spock; it is the threesome, if you will. So I'm glad about that. I don't know about the villains yet. I don't know anything about the plot, really. And I do think, you know, people have said, oh, it's too poppy, too action-y. I mean, it's a trailer.
Yeah.
They're not going to put the talkie scenes in, so we've got to hope that there's some substance there as well.
Absolutely. Idris Elba seems to be glimpsed in the piece as a... if James Dyer were here, he could probably already identify the race, but as a blue-faced alien. And I'm thinking to myself... sound like Charlie Nicholas in Soccer Saturday. I'm sitting here thinking to myself, Jeff. I'm thinking... that must be a hell of a role if he has willingly succumbed to that level of prosthetics.
Yeah.
For this. So fingers crossed. Fingers bloody well crossed for Star Trek Beyond. And also Independence Day Resurgence. Exclamation mark. I like this trailer. I think this film is going to hit that nostalgic sweet spot that Jurassic World did this year, where people, you know, it's a sequel that you maybe didn't, most people really didn't think that they wanted or know that they wanted, and then this movie's going to come along and remind them of how much they loved the original.
Yeah.
And they're going to go out and see this one. And certainly this one's more of a sort of legacy movie, I guess, because it has Jeff Goldblum and Bill Pullman in it. They're up front and center in the trailer. Yeah, I'm excited. My only concern is that the first movie had that USP of we are blowing the shit out of the world's greatest landmarks and recognizable cities, and this one I think will have that to an extent.
Mm.
But I wonder about that. And obviously, it's much darker. The tone seems to be much darker than the first movie, which was despite killing billions of people, was a bit of a romp. So I'm intrigued to see
how
this one
dark
happens.
Today. You're so dark.
More for me to eat. More charred corpses for me to eat. And then, I don't know what's happening.
I don't know. But I'm pleased to see Jeff Goldblum in anything, and
absolutely.
I'm looking forward to it.
He would improve everything.
Yes.
Including this podcast. So, Jeff, if you're listening, and I know you are, get in here. Get in here now. Quickly, before I say something more depraved. Just very, very quickly, earmuffs, if you don't want to know any spoilers for Independence Day Resurgence, exclamation mark. But this week, the Independence Day website updated with some info about the whereabouts of Will Smith's character, because Will Smith famously didn't come back for the sequel. He chose to do Suicide Squad instead. Countdown to spoiler warning. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. He's dead. He's deed. They deadified him.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and we're back.
I cannot believe they killed Will Smith in between those movies.
Oh my God.
Sorry. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have stopped talking about how Will Smith is killed in between Independence Day and Independence Day Resurgence. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We're back in the room. Good?
Okay.
Everyone spoiler free, and we can move on with our lives. And very, very quickly, another bit of space news. Catherine Waterstone, who is great, obviously, in Inherent Vice, mm-hmm. Is the daughter of Sam Waterstone, a.k.a. Jack McCoy in Law & Order. That's the most important part of this news story. She is.
No.
She signed on to star in Ridley Scott's Artist, formerly known as Prometheus 2, Alien Covenant.
Ooh.
Colon Covenant, I believe.
Sure.
Alien Colon Covenant as the lead, as a space lady, an astronaut.
That's the
right word. Called Daniels, who travels to this planet called Covenant,
uh-huh.
and thinks it's some sort of paradise, along with her crew. They think it's a paradise, and they turn out to find Tim Peake.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was going that far off world.
Yeah, but apparently he does. Or they find Michael Fassbender's David.
Oh, one of the two.
So that's all our movie news. I will say next week, I'm probably not allowed to say too much about this thing yet, but next week our final issue of the year goes on sale. It is a cracking issue. Loads of great stuff inside the issue. Deadpool is on the cover, doing things that you might expect Deadpool, who breaks the fourth wall, to do. And if you don't subscribe to Empire on the iPad or other devices, then perhaps you should.
Oh yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. But it's very good.
Yeah, it is.
All good and evil news agents. So go and check it out in digital form or paper. It's very, very good. But I can't say too much about what's actually inside the issue just yet. Sorry, guys. Now it's time for our last guest of the year as we look ahead to next year. Tom Hooper's The Danish Girl, the story of...
So Eddie Redmayne plays mm-hmm. a character called initially Einar, who's a Danish artist living at the beginning of the 20th century. So he comes to realise his transgender nature and becomes the first person to undergo sex confirmation surgery.
There we go. It's out on January 1st, and Junior Nugent spoke to Tom Hooper in London recently. Do enjoy.
So we are very glad to be joined on the Empire podcast by Tom Hooper. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me with you.
It's very good to have you. We are obviously here to talk about The Danish Girl. I understand this film, or at least the script, has been floating around for about 15 years now. How did it arrive on your table? And do you think it would have been possible to have made it 15 years ago?
It's a good question. I mean, I fell in love with this extraordinary script by Lucinda Coxon 7 years ago, late 2008. I was in early talks about directing the King's Speech, and I was blown away and moved by this, you know, extraordinary love story between this pioneering couple, whose story I didn't know at all. And you know, so for me, it's been a 7-year journey to bring it to the screen, but that makes me a bit of a newbie or a newcomer on this film because, you know, my producers, Gail and Anne, have been fighting since 2000 to make it. David Evershoff wrote his novel in the late 90s. He's coming up to 20 years since he wrote it. So if anyone's prescient, it's, you know, probably David. But, you know, what's interesting is when I fell in love with it, it was considered a difficult film to finance, a hard film to cast, to put together. Now, you know, people tell me it's in the zeitgeist or it's timely. It's, you know, such a extraordinary shift in just the 7 years I've been involved. And I think that's, you know, thanks to extraordinary television like Transparent. You know, Jill Soloway's achievement's amazing there. It's thanks to, you know, Laverne Cox, Orange is the New Black. It's thanks to Caitlyn Jenner. I mean, all these things have sort of opened up, I think, popular consciousness to trans issues and trans stories in a way like no other time, you know, since certainly I've been making films. So, you know, it's an exciting moment to release the film. It's a very different moment from, you know, what it would have been like if I'd made it in 2008.
And obviously we have Eddie Redmayne as a star of the film. What drew you to him as a lead actor? I mean, obviously you worked with him before, but was the fact that he makes for a very convincing and very beautiful woman a factor in your casting?
Yes, I mean, I think you know, there's something about Eddie that was already or had been drawn to the feminine. I mean, he played girls' parts in school plays. He played. I think his first job was to be cast by Mark Rylance as Viola in Twelfth Night. So, you know, Mark saw something in him and cast him as a woman, not a man, in his first role. So, you know, he came to this film with a body of work of playing female characters. And I felt almost like I had a quest a little bit like Gerda, played by Alicia Vikander in the film. Gerda's an artist who becomes preoccupied or even obsessed by the femininity latent in her husband and starts to draw it and paint it, and actually her best art is this series of paintings called the Lily Paintings. And I felt I had a parallel quest of with my cinematographer Danny Kern and my team of exploring Eddie's femininity and helping Eddie to explore that in order to reveal this character Lily.
Did you shoot in sequence for this film?
Good question. I mean, I always try to be as chronological as possible. As you know, it's normally impossible to do it totally because you can't kind of keep revisiting, you know, Copenhagen every time you have a scene in Copenhagen. But, you know, we built the Danish apartment and the French apartment, and we were able to shoot those scenes chronologically, and we did that first. And so the first 2 weeks were all those intense two-handers. And then Eddie said he wanted a long weekend off, and I said, no way, I mean, I know you're tired, but that's not going to happen. He said, well, just a Monday. I said, it's not possible. He said, it's the Academy Awards. I said, okay.
Pretty good excuse.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair cop. And off he went, and, you know, he came back on Tuesday morning straight from the airport, you know, basically straight back to work. I mean, it was kind of incredible. Like, his head wasn't turned by, I mean, you know, we talked about winning an Oscar for 5 minutes. I checked my watch and we went back straight to it. So, you know, the focus of him, you know, is amazing.
I mean, you mentioned Les Mis. You've obviously made him sing live for that. You made him dress up as a woman in this film. What are you going to do next? Like,
well, I mean, actually, his greatest sort of challenge, which he actually sort of failed at, was horse riding. But I remember on Elizabeth I, we first worked, you know, as he's leaving the room, I said, just one more question, Eddie, you know, can you ride? And he said, oh, yeah, of course. And, you know, cut to, you know, 3 months later, Lithuania, Helen Mirren on a balcony, Jeremy Irons, you know, 400 Lithuanian extras in full battle gear, Eddie Redmayne at the center of a, you know, phalanx of 20 horses. I call action. The horses run towards us. When they're meant to stop and engage the enemy, Eddie Redmayne managed to sail through the extras, through the crew, out the other side, totally out of control. And I got on the megaphone and shouted, you're a fucking liar, Redmayne. So actually, our working relationship was distinctly improved because, yeah, you know, he claimed he could sing and he could sing.
The transgender community obviously are very protective of depictions of transgender people. What's been their reaction to the film and to Eddie's portrayal?
I mean, we've had some very exciting reactions. I mean, we we got to screen the film and talk about and then do a panel at the White House a couple of weeks ago. And I was on a panel with Jill Soloway, who wrote and directed Transparent, and Jeffrey Tambor, who plays the lead. And it was the day was called Champions of Change. It was celebrating LGBT artists and activists who've really made a difference in that community. But for me, to your question, I mean, the most moving experience of screening it for a trans woman was actually Jennifer White, who was one of my musical directors on Les Miserables, who's a trans woman who was going through transition, actually, when we were shooting Les Mis. And Jennifer played the piano for Eddie when Eddie sang Empty Chairs, Empty Table. She was playing the piano accompaniment. A lot of Jennifer's emotion is in the score of Les Mis, but she played a lot of the piano accompaniment to the singing. And I screened it for her before I locked the film, because I wanted to screen it for someone, a trans woman that I knew well and had worked with previously. And when the lights came up, her face was tears on it, and she said, "How did you know, Lucinda know, Eddie know about what it felt like? It felt so true to her experience, and that was for me kind of. I just felt, well, I'm not screening to anyone, but this screening, we're going to beat any of the other screening I do.
Yeah,
it's very moving.
Yeah, that must be very gratifying. It's been 5 years since you won Best Director Oscar for The King's Speech. What are your memories of that evening, and how has your life changed since then, if at all?
Well, I mean, the thing you probably people don't realise about what it's like, or certainly was like for me, was that as the moment approaches, your suspense about whether you've won or not is overtaken by the fear of public speaking. In other words, if you do win, you have to get up and make a speech in front of possibly 500 million people live, and that fact becomes terrifying as the moment approaches, and eclipses the suspense about whether you've won or not by quite a long way. And then I thought about the irony of the fact that I was there for a film about a man who is afraid of speaking in public, and there am I sitting there being afraid of speaking in public. But Ricky Gervais had given me some advice and said, you know, first of all, just get up to the microphone without falling flat on your face, and if you get to the microphone without falling flat on your face, then you can congratulate yourself of not making a tit of yourself. So that's a good start. So I remember I got to the microphone, I thought, I followed Ricky's advice. I haven't done that, so I should, give myself a moment of credit for the fact I haven't really. I've done okay so far. And then I kind of looked out in the audience and I saw my mum there, who was with me. And of course, as you probably know, she had, in an extraordinary set of events, found the script of The King's Speech, but she'd been invited to a play reading of The King's Speech at a Fringe Theatre in London by some friends. And I suddenly had that awareness that I was lucky enough to win an Oscar when my mum and dad were still alive and were in the audience, and I was able to honour them in the speech, and actually it was great.
You're obviously an Oscar veteran now. Have you got any tips for newcomers to the game? I mean, it's a 4-hour ceremony. Do you pack a lunch?
I don't know. I mean, I found it so surreal, because in the commercial breaks, I found Steven Spielberg sitting in front of me, and Steven and I ended up having a conversation about Les Mis, because he at one point considered directing Les Mis. So I was like, having conversation, getting advice from Spielberg about directing my next film at the Academy Awards. The whole thing was so surreal. I just didn't quite know what to do. So I suppose my only advice would be, if you're in that lucky enough to be in that situation, enjoy the surrealism of it.
Yeah.
It's not every day.
Yeah. Great. Well, good luck with the film.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Tom Hooper, thank you very much.
Thanks. Cheers.
Okay, that was our last guest of the year, Tom Hooper. His film, The Danish Girl, is out on January 1st, as is David O. Russell's Joy. And then next week on Boxing Day, we have Daddy's Home and Ron Howard's In the Heart of the Sea. We won't be reviewing those in this edition, because we're about to talk Star Wars until our faces turn blue. But we're back on Jan 8th. But what we will say is, Danish Girl, 4 stars. Very good. Go see it. Joy, 3 stars, which, as we always say on the podcast, is a recommendation. Daddy's Home, 3 stars as well. And In the Heart of the Sea, sadly, just a 2-star film for Chris Hemsworth fighting a giant whale and starvation and the elements and all sorts of stuff as well. And he doesn't have his hammer.
He doesn't.
It's a problem.
It cripples him.
It's a big problem.
It would have made a huge difference. But we do have one film to talk about this week. It's out already in cinemas. You may have heard of it. It's a little film called Star Wars The Force Awakens. We will obviously be tiptoeing around this one very carefully here, just in case you haven't seen it, and we know people would like to yell spoilers, and we're very careful about that. But obviously we do have the spoiler special podcast. It's out on Monday, 21st of December, in which the Empire team tackle a lot of complex and thorny issues in the film and try and answer the big questions. And for that podcast, we may have an interview with Lawrence Kasdan, the writer of the film. It's not entirely 100% confirmed yet, so don't go in expecting that. And it certainly won't be a 2.5 hour Chris McQuarrie-esque marathon. But here we go. Okay, spoiler-free Force Awakens review. Helen wrote the Empire review. She gave it 4 stars. A wise choice to avoid 5 on a Star Wars film. Believe me, those things come back to bite you.
I would have. There is a 20-minute period near the end of this film where I thought, oh my God, it is a 5-star film after all.
Okay.
And then it didn't quite maintain that level. And I thought certainly the first hour for me had not maintained that level, so I went 4 in the end. It felt fairer, but it was a strong 4
okay.
for me.
Totally agree.
So what can we say? Now here, I'll be all right. Let me just say this. We were accused frequently on Facebook of having spoiled the film in our review. Let me just say, there is not a single spoiler in that review, nor will there be one in this review. However, we are going to talk about the premise of the film. And if you consider that a spoiler, stuff that's in the opening crawl, in the opening 15 minutes, then stop listening now. We gave it 4 stars. Go with God. Come back to us later.
Yes, there's a lot to like about this film. So go and enjoy it. Star Wars, yay, it's back. I got goosebumps in the first, when the logo comes up, the Lucasfilm logo comes up, the words a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away come up. Then the music kicks in. Then you get the crawl, and I had goosebumps. But for me, there's a lot to like about this film. Yes, the guy who gave Attack of the Clones 5 stars is not entirely on board with this, but I liked a lot of it. Obviously, I'm not going to give Attack of the Clones 5 stars now. I don't like the film anymore. It's not very good. But anyway, the point is, this movie, there's a lot of great things in it.
There are, definitely. Now, it does introduce these new characters. Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, Finn, John Boyega, Poe, Oscar Isaac, and Kylo Ren, played by Adam Driver.
Yes.
All of whom are varying degrees of very good to fantastic. Nobody's really bad. I personally would have given Rey a few more scenes to really develop her character. But I know a lot of people who are in love with her as she is, so fine. I think Poe disappears, and this is a problem a lot of us have had. Poe disappears for a good chunk of the film, and we would like more from him because, again, he just seems like a dude.
He's very, very good. Need more Poe Dameron.
Need more Poe Dameron.
I would say.
But we have, I think, well, certainly I have basically no caveats about Finn or about Kylo Ren, both of whom I thought were absolutely terrific. John Boyega is so funny in this. Charismatic, charming, keeps the pace up, seems to have great chemistry with every single cast member.
Absolutely.
From the Wookiee to the droids. I mean, he's just a force of nature. And
pun intended?
Kind of. And then Kylo Ren, I just thought was, well, I said, and I have been called indefensible in saying this.
Yes, you have.
That he's the best Star Wars villain, but I just think he's utterly brilliant.
But let's just examine that statement, shall we, Helen?
Sure.
He's the best Star Wars villain.
Yeah.
Now, this is a franchise that has given us Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Arguably the greatest non-Hans Gruber villain of all time. The Emperor.
Yeah.
Who's pretty evil.
Sure.
Darth Maul, who doesn't get to do a lot, but is Darth Maul. And who can argue with either General Grief? No, I'm not going to end that. But certainly the Emperor and Vader.
Mm.
You are, I respect you as a colleague. I respect you as a human being. And I respect your opinion of this film. It's a very good review. And I think you got it bang on. However, I think in this one instance, you took temporary leave of your sanity.
Yeah.
He's an interesting character. There's a lot of complexity to Kylo Ren.
I agree.
And Adam Driver portrays him very well. However, he is, and I said this in the spoiler special as well, he's Vader light for me.
He is absolutely the opposite of that for me. He's better than Vader.
Full fast.
He has. He has like a 15-minute period in this film where Adam Driver basically gives Kylo Ren more weight to his backstory than the whole of the prequels managed to do for Vader. And I thought that was absolutely terrific, both as a performance and as a piece of writing. So I just love him. Anywho, the film is packed with references and sort of spins on Star Wars past, to the point where you kind of need a bit more new stuff. But I think maybe this is just setting the scene and then we'll get a bit more new stuff next time. But, you know, there's a lot of references to stuff that's gone before. There's a lot of callbacks. There's a lot of, it's a bit like that bit in the first film where, but this time it's swapped over.
Yeah,
you know.
Which is something that J.J. Abrams was accused of in Star Trek Into Darkness. And I feel that he hasn't entirely learned his lesson with this movie. It feels a little bit like Star Wars in the Darkness for me. Like that film took that's not a criticism necessarily. I'm just saying with Star Trek in the Darkness, he took Ratha Khan and tried to spin different elements, changed characters, saying different lines, that sort of thing. And it feels like that in this movie to an extent towards the end as well. Where I'm not going to say anything, don't worry, but it does feel at times that it's a bit of a cover version of Star Wars. With a little bit of Empire and Jedi thrown in for good measure. And there's not a great deal of original stuff in the movie. But what there is, I mean, the first 20 minutes for me are glorious. We meet the new characters. They're great. I really, really like them. He sets the scene very, very well indeed. The legacy characters, if you will, once they come into them, I'm not going to reveal too much, but we know that Han Solo and Chewbacca are in this movie.
Yeah.
And they're fantastic. My concern is that he presses the reset button on the characters a little bit too much. But again, this is spoiler special stuff. We'll get into that in the spoiler special. In fact, we did. But it's a rollicking good ride.
I honestly, personally, I don't know what more Abrams could have done. The second act definitely lulls a bit for me.
Yeah.
And I really do believe that he had a job to deliver an accessible, fan-pleasing film. It's that fine line of ticking all the boxes, isn't it? And bringing in new stuff. And I think he delivered in spades, and there are very few people that I think will be disappointed. So it just leaves me intrigued as to what Rian Johnson and Colin Trevorrow will be able to bring in, and if any of their style will slip through, because as we keep discussing, this is definitely a part one. So it's going to be really, really interesting. And I just want to touch on Driver. I agree with Helen, and I kind of print screened that quote from you and put it on Facebook, and people were like, really? And it's that kind of best for me equals favourite. He's absolutely my favourite villain. But then so few actors sort of get me in the gut emotionally, like Driver anyway. And I just love the fact that he's an unpolished version of Vader to an extent. He just has these sort of fits of anger and just his unconventional acting style mixed with that unconventional style of Kylo Ren, I just think is fascinating.
Yeah.
He absolutely... Although it's Boyega's film for me, I think Driver's definitely the strongest link by a long, long way.
I think actually that's probably fair. I think, you know, there's obviously, I mean, we haven't even talked about the action, the effects, because this is a Star Wars film and you would expect the very best in both. And certainly in terms of the effects work and everything, you pretty much get it. The action, I think it's interesting that they have... I think JJ's tried to keep something close to a recognisable Star Wars classical style. So even though he has all the digital tricks in the world at his disposal, he hasn't pushed the visual effects so much further than they could have gone originally. He hasn't, you know, pushed it that much further.
Yeah.
Than he could have gone before back in 1977.
No, absolutely. One of the criticisms of the prequels, one of the many criticisms of the prequels, you know, and I even said in the infamous 5-star review, is that at times the effects looked like they've been produced on an Amiga. And it looked really fake and artificial. And this one, I mean, the effects are, by and large, I'd say 99% absolutely there. The characters are there. There's some great action stuff as well. I have issues... as we'll get into in the spoiler
special.
Yes,
we'll get into that in the spoiler special.
Which slightly diminished the film for me, but it delivers, and it feels like Star Wars. I would say, for me, it's not as good as the original trilogy, any of the original trilogy.
I think that's fair.
And in a way, weirdly, I would have liked a bit more Lucas in the mix, which is a kind of weird thing to say, but I think, I mean, from a visual point of view, the man has an incredible eye. You can criticise the prequels all you want, and they're bad acting and bad scripts and blah, blah, blah. But some of the compositions in the prequel trilogy are phenomenal. And I kind of feel sometimes this movie needed to slow down a little bit and go for that sort of John Ford vibe. But still, a lot to like about this film.
Yeah, I definitely sandwich it in between the two trilogies for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But I have seen other people say, I saw a lot of people on Twitter today going, masterpiece, best one yet. And it's going to be intriguing over the next few weeks as this film rolls out to see exactly where it lies for people.
Yeah.
And also how much money it makes. Will it make all the money or all the money
and
times
then
two?
Some? Yeah.
Scary, isn't it?
By the time we come back in Jan 8th, we'll know where it is. We'll know whether it's coming close to hitting Avatar or whether it's kind of going to settle in around that, because it's going to make over $1 billion. There's no doubt about that.
There's no question about that.
Whether it's going to come close to $2 billion, whether it's going to come close to being the biggest film of all time. Gut feeling?
Over $2 billion.
Over $2 billion, but not biggest of all time?
Hard. That's just, I mean...
That's a big call, isn't it?
It's a big call. It's not a rational... decision. If someone showed you the top 20 films of all time and asked you to guess which one made twice as much as all the rest, you wouldn't. I don't think you'd call Avatar. I don't think you would. So I don't know how to
Avatar is such a weird outlier in so many ways, and it appealed to so many people. And this seems to be going for a niche market, but at the same time, I've heard people who don't really like Star Wars going to see this film.
I have had at least two people ask me, I've never seen any Star Wars films. How many do I have to watch before seeing this one? And for the record, I think you can get away with just episode 4. It would be ideal to watch the original trilogy, but you can get away with just that one.
To be honest, I think the way that Abrams and Kasdan teed up the film as well, you could probably go in cold.
You could go in cold, but you will lose something at that point.
You will lose impact, yeah. Definitely.
There's no nostalgia, is there?
Very quickly then, Emma, gut feeling, biggest film of all time?
Trillion.
A trillion.
Wow.
No.
And you said I was indefensible.
I think it's got to, surely, hasn't it? I don't know. Cameron's got to be sitting there nervous, isn't he? What's going to happen?
He's sitting there nervous. He's sitting there looking at Avatar 2 going, yeah, bring it on.
He's going, can you give me a Star Wars prequel?
And also, like,
I mean, new one.
If he doesn't have the two biggest films of all time temporarily, he'll probably still be okay.
I know. The tears of a billionaire really get to me somehow.
Right? It's sad.
Yeah. Okay, that is it. 4 stars for Star Wars The Force Awakens. That is it for this year's Empire podcast. We still got some specials to come. So it's a Peep Show special with Sam Bain and Jesse Armstrong, the writers and creators of the show, talking about the end of Peep Show, one of the great British sitcoms, and talking about the final episode in spoilerific detail. That's up now on the Empire website for you to listen to. Our Star Wars The Force Awakens spoiler special, as we've said, is up on Monday, the 21st of December. And then there's our epic annual, as reviews of the year often are, special, which will be up sometime next week. We're not quite sure of the date, but look for it before the year ends. We're back on January 8th, as I say. Join us then for more film-related fun. We'll be joined by David O. Russell, director of Joy, and we'll be getting our teeth into everything 2016 has to offer. Until then, it's goodbye from Helen.
Merry Christmas!
If you celebrate. It's goodbye from Emma.
Merry Christmas, and yeah, other holidays are available.
And it's goodbye from me. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. If that's your bag, have a great time. Please remember to download us when we come back. In the meantime, that's my alarm, which means it must be time to turn Tiny Tim over in the oven.
Oh, you're sick.
Give him a good old all over coating. Merry Christmas. See you next year. Bye.